Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news-ad-free. That's amazon.com/news-ad-free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
You're listening to Puma Podcast. This special series was developed with the support of Journalism Fund Europe.
The problem now, when you just transfer people from the coastal area directly to their location site without a transition, you have to deal with their mindset. It's a matter of social preparation and orientation because there's always a culture shock, even within the Philippines, when you transfer people.
And that couldn't have been done.
Yeah, it could have been.
Welcome to the third episode of this special series by Teka Teka News. Puma Podcast produced this in time for the 10th anniversary of Typhoon Haiyan. So far, we've heard from survivors of one of the strongest cyclones ever recorded.
Hinahanap ko na yung mga apo ko, tapos yung anak ko, ito siya, ang laki ng sugat niya.
I was looking for my grandchildren. I saw my daughter Marian, and her wound was so big. She was bleeding so much, and she was pale. I thought to myself, if we don't get to the hospital, she might not make it. I was scared for her. And then I remembered my granddaughter. I was looking for her and couldn't find her. I told Marian, "Where's your daughter?" She said, "I dropped her again, Ma." She was crying and crying for her daughter. To calm her down, I said, "She's there, safe in another house." But I knew it wasn't true.
We've heard from an academic who has been following the rehabilitation effort and its most significant component, the permanent housing program for survivors.
I think it's really challenging and problematic. Challenging in the sense that, for instance, in NHA, or state-sponsored housing project, meaning it's being delivered by the government, you would notice that materials that were used were substandard, and a lot of beneficiaries would complain about the defective comfort rooms and the walls that do not have steel bars. The contractor would use the bamboo, and then, of course, several cracks in the housing units. And then, very problematic because the government did not consider, for instance, the number of family members that would be living in that particular housing unit. So it's like one size fits all. So whether you're 5, whether you're 3 or 7, you will stay in that limited dwelling unit. Also, there was no provision or consideration for elderly, for people with special needs or with disabilities, because it's just a space where it serves as a dining room, a bedroom, a kitchen, everything.
They've told us in no uncertain terms that the government did not, in fact, live up to its promise to build back better. 10 years after the typhoon locally known as Yolanda, we've also heard from a European investigative reporter, Sandra Rasmussen from Danwatch, a Denmark-based media outlet. Both she and I have found it nearly impossible to find out what happened to over $1 billion in foreign aid pledged to Yolanda's survivors. I'm Bella Perez Rubio, and in this final episode, we hear directly from government officials. They tell us what went wrong with the permanent housing program for Haiyan survivors and what they would do differently with the benefit of hindsight.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Started when the mayor asks where we can have a relocation site where it's safe.
That's Ted Hobson from the Tacloban City Housing and Community Development Office. It's the part of the city mayor's office that oversees the Yolanda Permanent Housing Program. While the National Housing Authority only works on state-sponsored housing, the local government is involved with both private and public relocation sites.
So when we say it's safe, there should be an assessment coming from different or national agencies like the Mines and Geoscience Bureau, PhilVox,
the Philippine Institute of Volcanology and Seismology,
to make sure that the area is free from flooding, there's no landslide area, and the elevation is better than here in downtown. So the good news is that we have a property in the north, but we also encourage the national government, like the National Housing Authority, to put up the relocation site in the north because, you know, it's open and it's safe based on the assessment of the national agencies like the NGB and PhilVox.
This is why most Yolanda survivors living along the coast were relocated about a 30-minute drive away from the city center, up north, to a mostly empty patch of land.
So as far as the development is concerned, we requested about 14,433 units from National Housing Authority. And out of that, they were only able to provide roughly about 11,000 and NGOs about 3,000. In terms of the development, there are still relocation sites that was not turned over to the city and will not accept it because it's not done. It's not finished. There are lots of things that we have to consider. One is, of course, the water system, the pipes, and the quality of the houses that they built. I'm talking about on the side of the National Housing Authority. So basically, there's a deficit of roughly almost 3,000 plus from the National Housing Authority. But the nice thing about it, it was covered by NGOs who were willing to put up their units or housing units in the LGU property, like GMA Capuso, Habitat for Humanities, Philippine Institute of Civil Engineers, Core Shelter, Global Medic. They are all in the government property. Okay. As far as the quality of the site development, there's no problem until now. Even the roads, concrete roads, still intact. As far as NHA is concerned, there are lots of things that we have to do.
The disparity between private and public housing for Hayan survivors is large and impossible to miss. One village in particular, built by the GMA Capuso Foundation, the charity arm of one of the country's largest broadcasters, stood out to us.
So Sandra, I want to ask you your initial impressions when you got here.
That's the audio editor for this series, Carl Dave Syatt, who traveled with me to Tacloban twice in 2023. And he's talking there to Sandra Rasmussen, the reporter for Danwatch.
I think it looks good. It feels like a whole functioning little town, a community. We just saw the UNDP site and it was more isolated in a way.
We featured the EU-supported United Nations Development Programme Village in our last episode. In our effort to track all the money sent by foreign donors, the UNDP site of just 55 houses was the only one that we could definitively say was built with European taxpayer money.
So it seems like a more rounded place. Can you say that? Yeah.
So we're right in front of the women-friendly space. We didn't see that in the other villages that we visited.
Yeah. No, we didn't see that. really like it.
Feels like a community. Right?
It really does, yeah.
In addition to sturdier-looking, well-spaced houses, the GMA Kapuso Village had sprawling public spaces, playgrounds flanked with ramps for accessibility, community centers, daycares, and as you heard Carl mention, women-friendly spaces like breastfeeding stations. It stood out even among other private housing initiatives and cut a stark contrast to sites built by the government. For the City Government Housing Office, their involvement with private housing sites like GMA Kapuso proved that the local government should have been at the helm of this project from the start.
And I think the national government so learned from the experience that it should have been the LGU because they know the people, the land, they know everything, rather than the national government dictating us, you know, this is the kind of housing that you need. Because on our part, when we talk about housing, it should not be all be housing. There should be a space for, you know, recreation. Personally, I'm not the 30-70 ratio that they are doing right now. 30% open space, 70% housing. For me, it's much better if 50-50, because you have to consider it's a community. You have to consider that, you know, people need to have space, especially for the kids, children, and there should be facilities, health centers, women-friendly space, daycare centers, schools, and I think on our part, we have done that in terms of planning.
In our conversations with officials, we did notice a bit of finger-pointing between the local government and the National Housing Authority. If you ask local authorities, including City Mayor Alfred Romaldez, the substandard housing being offered to residents boils down to a failure on the NHA's part. Here's what NHA Regional Director Constancio Antiniero had to say.
We cannot deny the fact that there is no such thing as perfect construction. Ang sinasabi naman nilang substandard because we are following the minimum specification. So meaning to say, we are mandated by the government to produce the socialized housing. So what can you expect? As what I have said, what you can expect the 290,000 house and lot package.
That's 290,000 pesos, or about a $5,200 budget for a house and lot. He also told us that private houses for Yolanda survivors typically have a budget of more than double that amount. The city mayor's office disagrees with that reasoning.
If you notice Habitat for Humanity and NHA Housing, basically it's the same.
Oh,
the same design.
Yeah.
Because it was approved by the Department of Public Works and Highways.
Yeah.
Okay, the same design.
So it's following the same template that the WHS.
Yeah.
Okay.
Approved, but to us how they implement it.
Okay, so we will try to ask them if they are going to implement the 200,000 and we will see. It's easy for us to say na kaya namin yan. But to tell you frankly, the 209,000 is not easy for NHA to implement talaga.
Speaking of beneficiaries, as we said, we spoke to a lot of them.
Mm-hmm.
Concerns. So if it's okay with you, I'll list some of the concerns and if you can respond or explain, you know, why. But for the residents, their main concern is really how far it is from the city center and how far that makes them from their livelihood. They're former fishermen, they used to work in Robinson's, or they still work in Robinson's, Save More.
Robinson's and Save More are central shopping malls that employ a large number of Tacloban residents.
Before Yolanda, we just served fisher folks, that's about 300. After Yolanda, that's about 3,000.
After?
Why? Because there were lots of NGOs, INGOs. When they went to San Jose, they provided small boats without, you know, other things that they need. And I mean, there's no such thing as full-time fisher folks because it's seasonal. At the same time, majority that they provided the small boats, they're not really fisher folks. Farmers or pedicab or tricycle drivers.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? That's one. On our plan, when we did the planning, we said that there should be a place for fisher folks. And we have decided it should have been Villa Sofia because it's near a coastal area.
Mm-hmm.
so they can have a boat landing. But it did not happen because, as what I said before, NHA was the one who did the lottery or raffle without involving the local government. Because if we were to decide, we have already an agreement that we will transfer people from one barangay, I mean the whole barangay by Purok, by subdivision, because they know each other. So in terms of adaptation to the area, it's quite easy, especially with your neighbors. You know your neighbor. That's a normal procedure.
But were there any considerations taken into what kind of livelihood they might be able to pursue in the north? Because even going there, I mean, I couldn't really imagine what kind of livelihood would be available to them. So what they do is they either they stop working or they go back to the city center to pursue work, and the cost of transport is also very high.
My question is, what's your priority? Yeah. Is it the safety of your family? Mm-hmm. Or your livelihood, because your livelihood, you can commute, okay, leave your family in the north. You have to sacrifice. There's no such thing as, you know, you can have the cake.
It wasn't possible.
10 years later, with the permanent housing program for Yolanda survivors still unfinished, and in the city's own words, substandard, I asked Ed Hobson from Tacloban's housing office what he would do differently if given the chance.
If I were to decide, I will not put the relocation site in the north. I'd rather buy expensive lots here.
Here, as in the city center by the coast.
Within 5 kilometer radius, because you're going to save a lot of, you know, utilities. You don't have to spend for school buildings. You don't have to spend for utilities like water, electricity, health services, the convenience. You know, people can easily do work in downtown. I'd rather have like a condo style.
And at the time when this was being decided, was there any office or official advocating for the house?
No, you cannot say that because it's what I said, it's an emergency.
Yeah.
And you know, when you talk about emergency, what's your priority?
Yeah.
Now, I think, given a chance to talk to other LGUs, I'd rather tell them, you know, buy a property, even if it's expensive, as long as terms of
high density
within, because you can easily access to schools, public transportation, utilities, work.
That already exists.
It's very expensive. Remember, putting up new roads, putting up schools, putting up utilities, hospital and everything, that's billions. Whereas if you just put it in downtown, you know, it's quite expensive, the property, and yet you compensate on the utilities and people that had a hard time.
And here's the National Housing Authority's regional director responding to that assessment.
Actually, with that assessment, I agree naman, pero it's not really 100% talaga.
I agree, but not entirely. Because if John Doe really wanted to have this permanent housing program, they would take it. And livelihood is just a matter of willingness and commitment. They can't say they don't like it because it's far. What about us? Our residence is also far, but it's your responsibility to be there on time. But what they want is for everything to be provided, and the government can't do that.
And hindi naman kaya ng government yun.
The people we spoke to, though, never mentioned that they were struggling with time management. Their main concern was the cost of transport each day. But Director Antiniero argued that their safety in the north was the most important factor to consider.
Siguro, I'll ask you the same question then. After 10 years of this project, if there's anything you could do differently with the benefit of hindsight, what would you have done differently?
One thing is we are going to improve for the funding. The better if we can have as much as 750,000 para makonsider naman natin yung other aspects na gusto nila close to the city. At least meron tayong a higher cost on the residential areas, not in Tacloban na remote areas pa sila. And then secondly is a more pleasant environment. It's just a matter of funding eh. Kasi if the government will give us more funding for the implementation of the socialized housing program, so we can adapt a higher version of the parameters.
So it all boils down to more money, says the national government agency, primarily tasked with implementing this housing project. And that brings us back to the question that unfortunately remains unanswered as we end this series. What happened to all the money sent by foreign donors in the aftermath of Haiyan?
The suffering that we went through is now a bellwether of what the world needs to face when we talk about climate change.
That's President Ferdinand Marcos Jr. speaking on Haiyan's 10th anniversary. Countries like ours, at the front line of climate disaster, are urging richer countries that are most responsible for climate change to pay their fair share of the bill. And there is no doubt that countries like the Philippines endure disproportionate levels of peril. President Marcos is one of several leaders from island nations who have called on richer nations to create a loss and damage fund to mitigate the effects of climate change. And this call is by no means new. Listen to this speech delivered at the United Nations Climate Summit in 2013 by Yeb Sano, who was representing the Philippines at the time.
My country is being tested by this hailstorm called Super Typhoon Haiyan. We remain uncertain as to the full extent of the damage and devastation as information trickles in agonizingly slow manner because power lines and communication lines have been cut off. The initial assessment showed that Haiyan left a wake of massive destruction that is unprecedented, unthinkable, and horrific. And the devastation is staggering. I struggle to find words even for the images that we see on the news coverage. And I struggle to find words to describe how I feel about the losses. Up to this hour, I agonize, waiting for word to the fate of my very own relatives. I speak for my delegation, but I speak for the countless people who will no longer be able to speak for themselves after perishing from the storm. I speak also for those who have been orphaned by the storm, for the people now racing its time to save survivors and alleviate the suffering of the people affected. We can take drastic action now to ensure that we prevent a future where super typhoons become a way of life. By failing to meet the objective of the convention, we may have ratified our own doom. We have to confront the issue of loss and damage. Loss and damage is a reality today across the world.
Nine years later, in 2022, nations at the front line of climate disaster finally secured an agreement for a loss and damage fund. But the details remain unclear, with countries set to vote on a draft agreement when the UN Climate Summit meets again starting November 30.
The excellencies and other members of the diplomatic corps who are here representing the countries who came to our aid in the depths of our difficulties after Yolanda. It is impossible to overstate how important it is to us what you did for us after Yolanda. And in the years subsequent to Yolanda, you stayed with us and stayed with us for years until you could see that we had recovered. And for that, we owe you a depth of gratitude that we will never be able to repay.
A decade on, President Marcos continued to stress the importance of the help we received from foreign donors. But if that help was so essential, why do we know so little about it?
So far, we can say that European taxpayer money, an estimated 9.7 million euros, went to building the UNDP village.
That's 55 houses out of the several thousand that went to Yolanda survivors.
We are fairly sure that a significant portion of foreign donations went directly to NGOs for humanitarian aid, but we don't know how much was given and how it was spent.
And if we're set to receive more and more money from richer nations to help mitigate climate disaster, how do we make sure that it will go to those who need it most? And that was today's episode of Teka Teka News. Again, I'm Bella Perez Rubio. Carl Dave Syatt edited this episode. Our executive producer is Jill Caro, and our senior news editor is Veronica Uy. If you like this special series, check out the rest of our short explainer episodes on Teka Teka News. Thanks for listening.
This special series was developed with the support of Journalism Fund Europe.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.